And she was, you know, dead on the toilet naked. And just this guy comes in and he's brand new. I have the police there, you know, and he's freaking out. And like, he's my muscle, you know, remember, right. I'm a little person.
I can guide you down the stairs, but I need you to get me up. On this week's episode of The Mortuary Show, we have the most famous, influential funeral director that these eyes and ears have ever seen. You might know her as the funeral babe. Her name is Melissa. She's all over TikTok. She does the best, most informational, I would say, content. She blows mine out of the water. She gets into the nitty-gritty for all the public. And I think all of our funeral directors want to know the inside story and on how funeral babe came to be, how she's such just an aspirational figure in our industry. Melissa, how's it going today? How are you?
I love it. That's great. I'm good. You are a hype king, huh?
That's what I'm best known for, you know?
Awesome.
So tell us a little bit, for anyone that doesn't really know you or watches all of your content. I mean, you could learn everything there is about you on TikTok, but tell us like how you became a funeral director. I believe you were a beautician that became a mortician, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. So tell us a little bit about your career path, and we want to know kind of the inside scoop on how you got to where you are.
All right. Well, I think that like all funeral directors, you would say it was a calling of some sort.
It always
for some
is.
Reason, I don't know. Like since I was like 17, I was like, I want to be a funeral director. My mom was a hairdresser, so she kind of like pushed me in that vocational route.
Nice.
And I think it's great to have a trade. So I did. I did beauty school. Knew I wanted to still be a funeral director. And I just so happened to be friends with a girl I worked at Carvel for like 9 years, scooping ice cream. And her sister was a funeral director or in like funeral directing school. So she brought her textbook in. I like made sure. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to do this. I'm definitely going to do it.
Yeah.
And I went straight into mortuary school. Didn't think about it. Oddly enough, I never even worked in a funeral home when I was in mortuary school. I was waitressing, cutting hair and scooping ice cream. And then
as one does.
Graduated and right as a funeral director, like boom.
The natural process from scooping ice cream to scooping some other disgusting thing off of an embalming table. So you always knew, like, so when you were going through beauty school and everything like that, was that part of kind of your plan to do it like that?
Absolutely.
Route?
And I told like my teacher and everything, I did very well in beauty school. Weirdly enough, I was valedictorian.
I mean, look at you. How could you have done well?
I don't know why. I just did really well. And everyone was like, she's going to go off and be like a hairdresser. And I was like, no, I'm going to be a funeral director.
Yeah.
And when I saw my teacher recently in like the supermarket, I was like, I'm a mortician.
I've done it. I've made it. The journey that everyone aspires.
Exactly.
I think it's cool that you went that route. And I think a lot of people would benefit from the knowledge and the experience that you gained through beauty school, because there's so much crossover. And I'm sure you learned a lot of things that kind of are applicable to your everyday life. And just in general, how has that helped you to kind of form, especially on the prepper side of things, how has that helped you in your career right now?
Anything from like skin, hair, nails, makeup, it's just like it comes so second nature to me.
Yeah.
Where I see like other people can struggle in things, it's just like I just pick up right away. I did struggle for like a good year and a half picking up mortuary cosmetics though. Like that was not, it's a big difference.
Tell us what are like the biggest differences that you see between, you know, doing cosmetics for a living person versus a person that passed away?
Just the cosmetics alone, just the thickness, the pigments, getting the right color tones compared to like even, you know, makeup that I buy myself, the color tones are off. I do like to mix them a lot.
Uh-huh.
It's like mortuary makeup just isn't there yet, but it does its job in a different way. It's, you know, it's like thicker and it holds better. And then you work with like skin slip and things like that. And, and, you know, lip wax and all that stuff comes out and it just gets mixed in. It takes a while to learn, I think.
It's a different sort of science. And I always like to say, like, they are, you know, still people end of the day. So I'm a big proponent of trying to keep it as light as I can, because I mean, I'm sure you've known from like when you were a kid, probably if you ever went to a wake or a funeral, like it didn't always look good. And I think we've come so far now. People aren't like they're not doing that cake on makeup like they used to back in the day. It's definitely come a long way, and people can see that from going to funerals. At least I know I've noticed a big difference from the past.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. That was like one of the things that like motivated me. I always heard people be like, well, their makeup's always cakey. Yeah. And that's like my number one thing. No cakey makeup. I think of it more like an art, like you're painting what you're trying to make somebody look like, not necessarily giving them makeup.
Yeah.
That's more of like an art, like make them look like their photo.
Right. It's like that restoration. So it's trying to, I mean, it always helps when you have that photo. It makes a big difference where you can see, okay, this is kind of where they were, this was their pigmentation and everything, and it makes a big difference, especially if you have kind of a higher quality looking photo. Now it makes a huge influence in the prep room and even during the embalming process. Do you use that at all as far as what you're mixing for fluids and things too, or are you more trying to do that after the fact?
Probably after the fact.
Yeah.
Use your fluids, as I see fit. And then it's like, I really think that the prep and the cosmetic go hand in hand, but it's hard to, take any of my mortuary, my hairdressing background or anything that and put that in the prep room.
Right.
In a way, when it comes to injecting and things like that.
Right. Yeah. I'm with
you. More like a science,
Yeah, it is. It is. And there's a fine line, and it's a beautiful art science mixture. And I think that's why there's so many people that love it, because people have the desire to have both in their life. And some people gravitate towards funeral service because you have both of those things. I guess my only thing, I try to kind of cosmetize from the inside out when I can. So if you have someone that has more of that darker pigmentation, you use like a different tanning type of fluid or like a pinkish, and try to do it so that there's less work that needs to be done after. Maybe I just try to optimize in that way so I don't have to do as much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that, like you said too, one of like my favorite things about funeral service, like really, like, is that there is so many different aspects. That is like my favorite part, is that every day is different. I could be doing anything from anything. It keeps things interesting. It's not like I have to sit at a desk. I like the diversity of it all.
Right. Every day is going to be different, and you don't know what you're going to do the next hour. So it takes a special person that likes that lifestyle, because someone that's very regimented would hate being a funeral director, I would think.
100%.
Yeah. So give us a tip then. What is your normal process for your cosmetics, and what do you do with your kind of background and how you operate? What is your normal process for doing cosmetics for a very typical case, if you had one?
Usually, so my trick, I've made a couple of TikToks on this, is like, I love lighter fluid, okay? Just ordered more. I love lighter fluid. So
tell us about that. What do you mean?
So one, like, no one's going to go on fire. Okay. It, like, liquid butane evaporates like within seconds. So like, you're good, there's no odor, but if you mix it with makeup, like I cut my brushes like with lighter fluid and use that to really opaque the makeup to set like a tone. And that's usually how I start. Unless like there's bad skin coloring where I really have to go in and do something different.
Right.
I always start opaquing. And then I like to put a lot of red. I mean, in my Caucasian cases, a lot of red.
Yeah.
Because naturally that's what we
have.
Capillaries,
it's gone. Right. Yeah. Ooh. Okay. That's
you didn't do the lighter fluid trick?
No. I always use the dry wash or the acetone or whatever, and I never did the lighter fluid.
Dry wash is cheaper. Dry wash smells so bad.
I know.
Purell works too to get the makeup off of the hair.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know. I always have hand sanitizer on the chapel, so I'm always just squirting it on tissues.
So many uses for that stuff.
And the tissues are everywhere, so it's fine.
Right. Exactly. What about cases like a tougher case? I mean, we're getting into embalming, like 101 stuff, but what about a jaundice case? How do you approach a situation like that from a cosmetics point of view for your toning and such?
Yeah, like if it's jaundice and the prep did not help and it's bad,
right?
I go in with purple. Purple, I will paint the whole everything purple because purple will neutralize that yellow look and start you off with
red,
nicer
purple. I'm sure,
purple. And if you ever get them in like the cosmetic cases, there's usually like purple, blue, all of that helps contradict certain cases.
So that would be your base layer, and then you would apply on top of that.
The whole face would be purple, and then I would like, you know, usually let it set. Sometimes put a little powder. And then I go in with like regular cosmetics and it really helps. Same thing if you have bruising.
Yeah.
Like you go in with yellow, paint the whole face yellow.
Right. It's that opposite kind of on the color spectrum is like, what color are they? Where do you want to get to? And let's try to neutralize it.
Like the color wheel is your friend. You know?
Yeah.
Like you could do a color wheel.
We're going back to second grade color wheel stuff.
And like,
it makes all the difference.
Yeah, I love to focus on like little details too, like using red on like the eyelids, especially older folks where the wrinkles are on the eyelids, just painting it because that's where you'd have higher blood pressure.
Yeah.
And under like the nose nostrils because it's usually red and dry. I really like to recreate a philtrum because I feel like that usually gets stretched and doesn't look right.
Yeah.
And really just cover like anything, like those small details, even like the eye, the inner canthus, just like a little red, little details.
It makes all the difference for the family. I'm taking notes like over here mentally. I'm like, okay, I get it. that's wonderful. Very, very nice. So you had this. So let's transition into hair a little bit too, because I know you're a stylist. So do you do all the hair then for your funeral home too? Is that part of like your,
100%. Yeah. All the hair, all the makeup. Hair is just like, you know, your hair on your head is dead. Like it is dead. That's just, we all have that. It's just the root, you know?
Uh-huh.
So really doing hair is just very similar to doing somebody who's alive, except they're laying down.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about the back so much. A little awkward in the positioning kind of thing.
Yep.
And it's like you can mold it to be anything. You can tease hair. You know, you don't necessarily need to cut everything. You can like women's hair for me is like, I guess, like my favorite part maybe.
Yeah.
Which could do so much.
Yeah, and I'm sure your funeral home appreciates that because they don't have to outsource someone coming in to do the hair, which most funeral homes have to do. So
a lot of people
you're a jack of all trades.
Yeah, a lot of people are turning in-house too,
hairdressing. If you have someone that has the skill like you, why wouldn't you want someone that's able to do it and understand and kind of be mindful and weary of what's going on with the face? Because sometimes, you know, hairstylists, they might not is be conscious of like, this is very delicate process that we have going on here. We don't want to mess with it. So I think having someone in-house makes a big difference.
Yeah, no, 100%. Even like the autopsy stitching, like I'll go in and if it's dark hair, I'll paint every stitch with black. And when you do it in-house, like I get to do it on my time, you know, I'm not like on another funeral home's time. Like I only have an hour, like I could spend all night on it.
Right. It's those little details. It's everything. I have a question for you that just popped in my head. What about, so I've noticed several times before for hair dye, for men or women, do you ever have kind of that line? So if it's a darker and it would go into the skull in the actual discoloring, do you ever get that? Or is there a way that we can prohibit that to make it look more natural?
Are you talking about on the front of the head or in the back?
Yeah, on the front. So if you had someone that had maybe a lighter hair color when they passed away, but they always had a dark hair and you have a dye and sometimes that dye goes into the actual top of the skull and you could see that. Do you have any tips for us as far as kind of prohibiting that potentially?
Vaseline always works if you can coat it with Vaseline.
Yep.
But if not, if you ever want to hide it, just take hair from the back and add hair.
Add hair. Okay.
You can add hair to cover it. You can always add hair.
That's true. From the back. That's what the back's for.
No one's going to
see the back. What is some of the more unique reconstructive that you've had to do, whether it was facial or hair, that you've seen throughout your years of service?
Both. My, you know, the most two serious ones were gunshots, you know, self-inflicted gunshots. Like, I guess that would be the most, you know, that you see and the most you work on.
Definitely.
You know, I guess in a sense it would have been a reverse panel, but I recreated half of a face from a gunshot. a shotgun. Yeah, one of those really messed up things. But it wasn't the viewing side. I mean, we didn't have to get a reverse panel, but recreated it with wax. And not even what was really kind of unique about it is I ended up using actual candle wax over any mortuary wax. I was just melting it and melting it and melting it and playing with it to recreate, which worked great. Okay. And always anything with the hair, I always find to be like my more intense recreations. You know, moving hair and creating hair, whether I be like running out and getting hair extensions or wigs, like anytime. Like, I love that part.
I love that you put in all of this effort, and that's something that we can do to separate ourselves from other funeral homes. And the families really do notice those things. And wow, mom or dad looks so good. Like, how they haven't looked this good in years. And for me, that's the biggest compliment I could ever get when I'm in the prep room, is someone saying that. Forget it. That's why I signed up to do this.
it's the best feeling. Like, I, and it's always that moment too, when you walk the family in for the first viewing and like you're standing there and they're going over and you're like, oh my gosh, what are they going to say? What are they going to say?
Yeah.
Sometimes they're like, oh my God, it looks nothing like them. And you're like, ugh.
And then you just go into the corner and you cry the rest of the day.
Terrible day. And then like the days where they swore they were going to make it a closed casket and they were like, you want to keep it open? Oh. I go out after. I'm like, who's getting drinks? We're partying now.
Everything's on me. My day has been made.
Yeah. Like, you can't beat that. That's a good day in funeral service.
It really is. What's your favorite part about funeral service? I know you do prep room and you do, you know, front of the store things too, meeting with families and going on funerals and removals. Tell us what your favorite part is.
My favorite part is arrangements, which is usually people's nightmare. I love arrangements. I love meeting the family for the first time. Like, that's to me, like, where we start. Like, I get to meet you. Yeah. I get to feel their personality, you know, learn about the decedent and really like go through the planning process where I also get to show them my personality and who they're going to be working with. Make them feel comfortable. I'm like, call me, text me, page me. I'll be there. Whatever you need.
Page me.
So I like that interaction. Yeah. Like watching people go from strangers to, you know, even at the end of the funeral being like your family now, like that means so much to me.
Right. And when you get the hugs and people, they feel that connection. You're part of the family sometimes. And that's a special, special thing that not many people get to experience in their careers. And that's why part of why being a funeral director is such a beautiful thing.
Like, my favorite part.
It is.
And like, I hate removals. That's my worst. That's like, I hate making removals.
I know you do. That you have a fantastic video and you're pretty much pretending to be on a house call and you're in a backyard. Do you know the one I'm talking about? And you're going through and it's a sunny day. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, Melissa's filming this. She's like actually going on a removal in a yard. I'm like, there's no way. And then you drop the camera. I'm like, this is crazy. What's going on? And then it was just like, was it a dead rodent or something in your yard?
I don't know if it was like a rabbit, but like my mom was to come here and get this. I was like, I'm not doing that. Like, I don't care what I do for a living. I'm not doing that. I was sweating. But like in real life, like, removals to me, like, I get in the car and I get so nervous now, unless I'm going on like a call with somebody else, which hospitals, nursing homes, hospice facilities, I go alone.
Yeah.
I get so nervous because I don't know if I'm going to be able to pick them up. You know, like that's where I get. And I start stressing out. And then like, if I do pick somebody up and they're like, I didn't know they were 400 pounds or 300 pounds, security will help me. And then I'm usually in the car, like crying, calling someone, can you please meet me at the funeral home?
Right. I always love the hospitals that'll give you the heads up. You know, they just say, just so you know, so-and-so was a little bit heavier. And I'm like, thank you so much for telling me. I know exactly what you mean. I'm bringing two.
I wish they told me. Yeah, I remember one time I showed up and I had like this guy who's like 400 pounds and the security guard's like, they sent you? I was like, this is not good. It took four of us to get him in the car.
Whoa. Oh, it's just, well, you're thankful that people are willing to help, because when you see someone struggling in a situation, it's only natural for most good-hearted people to help. I remember a situation that I was in. I was going from a hospital and I had to park the van on the top of this tall ramp and it went all the way down, but there were, I don't know, trucks down there doing deliveries. You know how the removals are. And it was a larger person. I was like, I have to go up this ramp. But then someone parked in front of where the ramp was. So I had to go on an angle up. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
I'm like holding this person by the side, trying to push. And I'm like, the person was like tilting. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to flip. And some guy, a guy that was working construction, they're sprinting over. I was like, I gotcha. And helped me. I was freaking out. I don't want to drop anyone ever. But yeah. It's good to see when people will step up to the plate when you see someone that's in a situation that needs help. I love hearing those type of stories.
Yeah, they always come. And it's nice sometimes too. I do get a lot of help. You know, people always want to offer me help. So I'm just like, I'll take it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. So tell us a little bit about the funeral home that you're at. You're at a small firm, I think. And family owned. That's beautiful. And how do you like being at a small funeral home, and what is it like on your day-to-day basis?
All right.
Crazy, I'm sure.
I love being in a family owned funeral home as much as, you know, I also don't like it. You know, I love it and I hate it. It's a love hate relationship. I would never leave. You know what I mean? I would like family owned. I love it. It's enough to do all the work in the house, you know, so everything gets done in-house, everything's done by you, and very personal. So that's like my favorite part, you know, really being involved from first call to the end. But being family owned and operated, we don't have the resources like these big facilities do, or multiple funeral homes where you have multiple staff that can go from location to location.
Right.
So you work 24/7, 365. It's like a true... Yeah. You know, old school undertaking, yeah. You know, how they preach it in the schools. That's how I do it. And I love it. But again, it gets hard. Vacations are hard. You know, yeah. Going out to dinner can be hard.
Yeah.
I don't have a schedule. So, you know, but I do love that. Like you're so involved in every operation of it. So I just consider it like part of my lifestyle. Like I just kind of get up and, if there's funerals, I have to be there. If someone dies, I have to be there. And if it's quiet, like I go into the office, I do some work, you know, catch up on things,
enjoy
my time at home.
But it is true that you're able to be there every step of the way for a family. So that's something that smaller funeral homes are able to do that larger ones aren't. So maybe that's why a lot of families still gravitate towards the smaller family owned, is because they want someone that's going to be with them there every step of the way. And it's a personal touch that you can offer. And when you have someone like you that has such a good heart and a good personality and in it for the right reasons, it makes all the difference in the lives of the people that are going through tough times.
Yeah. And it's crazy too, because, you know, most people, they don't even know what they're experiencing or what they miss when they have other types of, you know, like they don't know what they're missing. They never had it.
Right.
Or they expect that because I gave that, but they don't know that that's not how things are in other places.
Right. They don't know, especially people don't go through that many losses. I mean, hopefully in someone's life, you would hope that they don't have to go through too many of them. So sometimes they don't know what they're missing, or they don't know what service they could be getting. So that's why I love what you do on social media, is to show people kind of the behind the scenes things and just show the general public, hey, this is how funeral service works. This is some of the things you might be getting. This is how you can be more knowledgeable and gain some perspective on what the life is really like. And I think it gives people a sense of comfort, A, and then B, it shows them, hey, I should be aspiring to have my loved one service at a place that is able to do all the things that you do on a day-to-day basis. So it helps give people a different outlook on what funeral service is.
Yeah.
So how did you even start making your videos in the first place, and how long ago was it? And how'd you explode to be the most infamous funeral director on earth?
I started, like, I guess 2021, February of 2021.
Okay.
And I really downloaded the app in like December of 2020.
Yeah.
And I was just like a watcher, and I have a little cousin who was like making TikToks, like dance videos.
Classic.
And she was like, I'm gonna get TikTok famous. And I was like, you just need to talk to the camera. Like, you need to have a personality.
Yeah.
And she was like, you do it then. So I made a video. And it went pretty like decent for like my first video. And I was like, wow, that was kind of fun. And I enjoy like writing. I enjoy creating. I love, my brain is always ticking, like imagination, like thoughts, whatever. So being able to put it out was actually fun to me.
Yeah.
And I liked the idea that I was anonymous in a way. Like nobody knows me. I didn't tell my family, I didn't tell my friends. I was like, I'm just going to do this on my own. Yeah. And like I started to build relationships, I don't know, like followers. And then it just, I don't know, just kind of like took off and without me even really realizing it. Like,
right.
And I got recognized one day and I was like, oh, wow.
Whoa. How often does that happen? Is it once in a while or do you get recognized every now and again?
Now it's happening a lot more, which is, it's crazy to me. Like I just went out to Top Golf last, like on Tuesday, and I got recognized and I was like, this is wild. On funerals now, I had somebody come in the other day and take a picture with me at their grandma's funeral. I was like, I like get so shocked, like as probably as much as they are. Like, I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
I'm just like, I don't know if I'm cringing inside or.
That's really cool. I love to hear that. That's, I mean, it shows that you're having some influence on people. And I notice from your videos that you have to be a good writer. When you do your monologue videos and you really tug at the heartstrings in such a profound way, and you could tell that you have a passion for writing in your videos.
Thanks. Yeah, I have like a lot of thoughts after work. Like I have to process my thoughts after like some days, and that's exactly how I do it. I write.
It's like your journal. Your TikTok is like your journal, honestly, and that's probably a good way. Do you think that's part of how you cope with the challenging things that you have to deal with every day?
Yeah, I mean, like, and when I started the TikTok, like my three things that's on my page is education, comedy, and perspective.
Yeah.
I wanted to teach people, you know, about funeral service. You know, everyone comes in the office and half the people don't know what I'm talking about, which is like wild to me.
Right.
Everybody dies. So yeah. Like educating people, and also like anytime I went out and someone was like, oh, guess what she does? And I, you know, it was like 1,000 questions later and I'm like, oh my God. So I thought that was a cool thing. And then like the comedy part, like as funeral directors, like, you know, you gotta laugh, you know, this is the real world and
the only way to make it through.
Yeah, you know, you got to laugh sometimes and we can have jokes inside. And then the perspective was sharing me. And a part of that was like even my own family, my closest best friends, it took years for people to understand when I say, I can't, I'm on call. Or, you know, I got to go, I won't be there, or I'll be there. Like, it just took years for people to understand, like, I just can't take off of work to go to a baby shower. You know, if I could be there, I'll be there.
Right.
And I felt like, you know, through the pandemic, that's what really hit, like, I felt so disconnected, not only from like the rest of the world, but my own family and friends. Like they just did not understand what I was going through as a funeral director and the things we see and it's heavy, you know, and we don't talk about it because we signed up for it. So with my perspective, I want people to see like, I'm just a normal person too. Like I like to do everything else like everybody else.
Yeah.
Just have a unique job. And I love to share that perspective so people understand me. And it's like, you get it, you know, and you can help understand funeral directors or, I mean, I'm wild, but, you know.
Who is, you have to be a funeral director. Right. Do you notice that it's made a difference in your relationships, like with your family and your friends, now that they have a better understanding of what you do when they watch your videos?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Huge difference. And like my cousin, she's like my biggest fan and like she'll watch my videos after and she'll talk to me about them. And like she, like I said, I'm like, you're really getting a full education. Like I love that she knows and she can help other people when, you know, her friends go through things, which is awesome.
Yes. It makes you more prepared for a loss because in our society, I don't think people talk about death as much as we really should. And that's something that we're both trying to curb, I would say. And when you watch these videos, you're able to better understand and better process what you're going through. And it's less, mystical than I think it used to be because people can understand what we are doing behind the scenes, where the value is and what we bring to the table every day and how hard we really, really do work.
I think we are the hardest working, like nicest, like I always try to say too, like, I speak for the, like, the general of funeral directing. I know not everyone's great, all right? Like, but yeah, like the people that I know, and they're good people. Like, I cannot even, like, when I say good people, the nicest people I know, so real, like, you know, down to earth.
You have
or
to.
Or they're, like, burnt out and mean. So.
Yeah. Or you've been doing it for 20 years and you're like, I can't take this anymore.
They missed the exit when they showed up. Like, they should have been out.
What was maybe your first video that ever really popped off and you're like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. Like, what is going on? Because I remember that for us, when we had one video that went kind of crazy, it was like, what is going on and why are people watching this?
The first one that ever went was, I had a friend. He asked me to, I love to paint, very crafty. He asked me if I would paint the elevator at his funeral home, like, you know, paint the ceiling. He wanted to do clouds. Mm-hmm. So I did. I painted the lift ceiling with clouds, and I made a TikTok, and it was that song, Going Up to the Spirit in the Sky. Yep. And I don't know, it was like 600,000 views and like so short. And I was like, that's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Have you noticed, this is more niche for people that actually watch TikTok, but have you noticed a large change in the past 6 months as far, it seems like longer content of people trying to get more in depth with knowledge? And I feel like back when TikTok first came about, it was more short, quick clips. And now it's more transitioning into a YouTube style format. Have you noticed that difference, or is that just me making it up?
No, 100%. Even me, I've been testing my own boundaries. Like, I've made videos like recently that are 8-7 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you can see the analytics. People are watching them. You know, most of my videos are going, like, I used to have like the 3 minute. And, you know, I'd always kind of cut it close sometimes. You know, I talk a lot. But, like, I've been hitting that 10-minute button as, like, editing from there. But, yeah, I posted some pretty long videos that get some pretty good attention.
Yeah. Does that make it harder? I mean, I know for my sake, it definitely does. And it's just, you have to think a lot more. You have to be more thorough. And is it more of a challenge than to come up with new content?
I think so. I think, you know, for me, sometimes it's taking it and actually making it shorter than what it needs to be, because I feel like I try to provide so much. I find so many people who consume this content, one, don't pay attention correctly, or they don't follow the education they're given. So it's kind of like always piecing it together, because so quickly somebody will take something and run with it. So I'm kind of more like, let me just over provide so you really understand what I'm saying on, like, I always say I try to explain everything on a third. If I could explain it to a third grader, that's what I want to, like, always try to aim for, so that I end up using more words.
Right. It's a good mentality to have. And it's very true. Some people will get hung up on a specific point you're trying to make. And if you can elaborate and expand on what you're saying, it leads for less room for confusion, and people can really comprehend, okay, this is what she's trying to address and show us, this is what the main concept is, and really get the behind the scenes look at what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I try it, like, sometimes too, like, I watch a video after I posted it and, like, realize, or someone comments, like, I did one on, like, if you have no money, like, I totally forgot to mention that not everyone takes social services. Like, I just, you know, I'm recording as I go and I'm trying to keep it snacking. It's like quick and,
yeah,
you forgot sometimes information, or like, I leave
quick,
something out.
Quick cuts, and you keep it very engaging and fast and make it move. And I think that's what people, they can resonate, and it keeps them there for longer so they can see. And how many takes do you do?
It really, sometimes, like, I just get them out. Like, I just go. Other times, like, I'll struggle. Like, I've been trying to make one on green burials for like a month. Like, every time I'm in the car and I'm waiting, I'll, like, record. I have not one green burial video up, okay? Like, it's, like, a touchy subject for me. It's not that it's touchy. Like, I want to talk about it. It's just I don't want to say the wrong thing because people don't understand what I'm trying to say.
Right. And you don't want people attacking for what you say.
Like,
it's not worth it.
like environmentalists. Like, I'm not trying to go after them, but like when I hear green burial, my idea is that it is the simplest, you know, less impact on the environment kind of service. So to me, in my area, the closest thing to a green burial is a Jewish service, you know?
Right.
No vault, no embalming, wood pine box.
Yep.
Ashes, ashes, dust to dust.
Yeah.
But then you have like human composting, like that's more energy to speed up something that could be done naturally. So I feel like you're taking up land and you're buying equipment and it just seems like it's not good on the environment.
That's a good point. Yeah, I never thought about it like that. Yeah, that's
you know, green burial sites, like if you're going to drive 40 miles to the green burial site, you know, like how much gas, like it's probably just better to get buried.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Not that I'm against any of it. I'm all for it. I'm for whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that's what we're here to do. It's like whatever you want, I will make happen for you. And that's part of what we need to do as funeral directors is just go with the flow. You have to go with the flow.
You have to. Like, you know, you get a salt urn. It's a natural urn. It's like, yeah, but it's getting shipped in a cardboard box in plastic. It was manufactured in some place, but you're going to get the green urn. Okay. But I support it. Like, sure, I'll order.
Yeah, I'll do whatever you want. I'll do whatever you want. As long as you're taking care of us, I'll take care of you and everyone will be happy.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things for like the general public. Like, I feel like people constantly comment like, well, I'm going to get cremated. It's like, okay, I'm cool with that. Like,
yeah, I'm not.
I support you.
Right. Yeah. That's...
I feel like everyone thinks that I'm trying to push some kind of like people think that funeral directors are trying to push caskets and push these things. And it's like, we just want you to do what you want to do.
Right. And our job is to give you options and you choose what you'd like. And we try to be exemplary in how we carry out the service and what we do for you.
Yeah.
Oop, that's a death call here. Hold on just a second. All right, I think the students got it. I'm sorry about that. You know, we've been seeing a lot more business come in ever since we started mortuary marketing. And I got to tell you, all the funeral homes we work with, they're saying the same thing. So what do? We run ads on Google and other similar sites that get directed at families that need a funeral home in your area. It then brings them to a page that we've designed for you that gets the family to call you to inquire for your services. It's really increased our volume big time. It's working for my funeral home, and I think most parlors could really benefit from its uses. I put a bunch of information in the podcast description. Go check it out. I'm always happy to help talk with you and answer any questions you might have. All right, let's get back to our morbid discussion.
Give us a story. I want to hear for our funeral directors more behind the scenes, maybe one of the more unique experiences you've had or a crazy story that would really kind of hit home with our funeral director audience.
I like when you say crazy, we got to narrow this down.
let's talk crazy case or crazy removal, prep room style.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. My versions of crazies can be a lot different. Removals, like, okay, this was last week.
Okay,
to me, well, I don't know. I get this guy. In New York, you have to be a funeral director to go on a removal. That's right. Like New York law. So I'm calling everybody near me and like my second man. What?
What about two person? So does it have to be one licensed funeral director? If let's say it's a house call and you have to have one. Okay, it's the same here.
Yep. So I can go with anybody per se. And I had one in the house and I'm calling everybody, all my pallbearers. That's who I call. These guys are like pushing 75, 80. All right. They ain't young. Nobody's answering. And I got this guy who literally just started at the funeral home last week.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, you can come. Anyway, we get to the house. I don't even have a reed stretcher. It's embarrassing. I have a two man that's like horrible. And I had my regular stretcher.
Okay.
And we had to stand the stretcher up through the house, out the whole house. Everything was so narrow and tight, huge flight of stairs. And she was, you know, dead on the toilet naked. And just this guy comes in and he's brand new. I have the police there, you know, and he's freaking out. And like, he's my muscle, you know, remember,
right.
I'm a little person. I'm dying. Like,
I thank God you're down the stairs, but I need you to get me up.
And these cops were looking at me like, we ain't going near it, you know?
Oh, no.
And that was just like, I don't know. That, to me, like, just silly situations. How did I get here? Yeah. I had one during the pandemic that was a shipper, an international shipper.
Okay.
And when we got the call, everything just went crazy because it was the pandemic. So everything was like on standstill.
Yeah.
So he ended up being embalmed. And then he ended up going for an autopsy.
Afterward?
Right? Embalmed. Okay. Autopsy. Back to me. And we had to get him on a flight internationally. But like everything was closed. So we ended up keeping him for 2 months. And
jeez.
Take him in. Now it's like time to like box him. He's going to the airport. He's out of here. I opened the stretcher and I just one look at his foot. And I was just like, I should have been a teacher. How did I get here? I was like freaking out. I can't do this.
Was it brutal? It was
just so long between like the autopsy, between like being like he was embalmed and then he was autopsied. Like, how do you? I don't know who was going to fix that.
Right.
Refrigeration can only do so much. There was just, it was far gone. It was a lot of decomp.
Man.
You know, it was just a really bad case.
Oh, that's never fun. I had, this was a couple of years ago, and we had a ship out and totally normal case. Thought everything was fine. No big deal. Person looked perfect. Goes to the airport, or one of our staff brings the gentleman to the airport, and it gets flagged by the airline. And they call me and they're like, hey, Michael, the staff at the airline is saying it's getting flagged because there's high levels of chemical or something, and it's all in his head. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, the x-ray showed up and they think something suspicious is going on. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? Like, this person has been embalmed. They've been aspirated. What on earth can I do? So they said, we're not accepting this body. And I'm like, okay, so bring him back, I guess. And I'll re-aspirate. And I don't know what else can I do? So I re-aspirate, they send back, and they said, there's still, it's glaring. The x-ray is bright. And I was like, well, the person's embalmed. Like, they're loaded with chemicals. Like, that's what you want. They're preserved. Like, there's nothing else going on. You could look at the person yourself. Like, I don't know, what else can I do? Turned into a big thing. Ended up calling the airline. I think I had to go there actually in person. I was like, I'm the embalmer. Like, this is a totally normal situation. Ended up, they accepted the body. We had to take the next flight. They missed the first flight. It was just a crazy situation that I've never come across, and I didn't even know was a possibility until, and I've never had it before or since. So
I've never heard of such a thing. That is wild.
Yeah, it was very strange. And I don't know, maybe someone trying to give a hard time, or I really don't know what happened. Still to this day, I'm like, if anyone listening knows why that could have gotten flagged or what the reasoning could have been, I'm all ears, because I don't know.
Yeah, we want to know right away.
So tell us one story about, you know, a family that you had to serve. Actually, maybe for someone that hasn't listened to one of your more recent TikToks, you had a crazy, crazy coincidental situation with some prayer cards. And I know some people would love to it's eerie and spooky. And I want to hear it, off the cuff, that story, for anyone that hasn't seen the video. You just listen to this and then go watch the video, because it's wild.
It was honestly the craziest thing that ever happened to me.
I'll let you tell, but I can't believe it. I feel like a crazy person.
I really think I'm stuck in I'm starting to believe that like we're in different timelines and we're jumping. Like, I cannot, there's no rhyme or reason to this.
Give us a story.
I had a direct cremation family. They direct cremation and ordered 50 prayer cards. It was like those custom ones with they had the cut out sides.
Got it.
So they weren't perfect squares. You know, they were really specific.
Yeah, you kept saying custom, and I was like, okay, what does she mean? And it was like, now I get it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, not like the normal cards that we print there. Like, I had ordered them from a company. They put a custom prayer quote on it. And even when they pick the prayer cards, and you know, like, they don't know what it's going to look like. We can change the fonts. They don't know my ad's going to be on it. Like, whatever. Got them. I held on to them for 2 months. In a bag, 50 of them. I knew there were 50 of them. She picked them up on a Friday with the cremated remains. And I was like, oh, you're going to, you know, where's your service? Where are you going? She was like, we don't know yet, but we're going to do something on Sunday. There's only like 12 of us or whatever, 15 of us. So we'll figure it out. It's like, have a good time. And then on Monday, I got an urgent call from answering service saying that from like a restaurant asking why I mailed them prayer cards. I was like, whatever. Call her back thinking like some other family maybe did like their, I don't know. I didn't know what the association was. Yeah. And I was like, what was the decedent's name? And she said, Ann Ida, which is who picked up the cards. And I was like, no, gave her those cards on Friday.
Right.
So this woman and me are going back and forth, like, no way. Like, she's like, no, like someone mailed them. And the daughter ended up calling me, like grilling me, like, why did I mail them to the restaurant? How did I know the restaurant? So I explained to her that I didn't, and I don't, there was no return address, nothing. And she went and picked up the prayer cards. I'm thinking they had to be different. They were identical. What? Arrived the next day. Like, nothing even makes sense. No one could have even mailed it from a Sunday to a Monday. Overnight mailing it. I got that call at like 10:15 in the morning. They had dinner there on Sunday. She didn't get the prayer cards till Friday. And I called the company, and there's only record of 50. And they know that if I reordered it, they would have sent it to me, not a restaurant.
Right. They always send it to the funeral home. They don't send it directly there.
Holy. And they have a pull system. Like, when they get a new order, like, my record would have been pulled, and it was never pulled, so they would have never been able to reprint it. It's impossible.
I mean, that is the most bizarre. I don't know. I don't even know what to say to it.
And like, people that I work, like my colleagues that are on the air.
Yeah, what did they say? Yeah.
Pulled me up. And they're like, because they know the name of the company. They know like their hours. That company closes like over the weekend. They're not like, you cannot get a delivery out. They close Friday, like last order in or last orders out by 12. She picked them up at 4. What? Even like the prayer card company was like freaking out. Like when I showed a clip on the TikTok, but I hung up and I told her the story, and she was like flipping out. She was like, how is that? And like, over now, this woman has like 67 prayer cards or something in her possession.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
and we still text. Like, she keeps texting, like, did you find anything? I told her, I'm like, ask any of your family members. Did someone do something?
Holy crap. That's like scary almost.
The only thing I can think of is the zip code, because there was no return address, but the zip code that came on that package.
Was it 66666?
No. But it's a town that I sometimes drive through on my way home from work. So I'm literally like, the only thing I could think is possible, like in another timeline, I mailed them to a restaurant and I stopped at this post office on my way home from work. I don't know. I don't know why that post, like, zip code, it has nothing to do with her, me, the restaurant, nothing. Just a random zip code that I sometimes drive through on my way home.
My jaw is dropped.
I can't make it up.
You can't. What on earth? There's no explanation. There is zero explanation for it.
Nope. Jeez, I've tried.
I didn't even know what to say.
Directors trying to figure out how, what company, how to look it up. Nothing.
What the heck? I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, you have to think there's some spiritual connection somehow. Like, what else? You try to bring logic to the situation. It's like, how can you? It's wild. Goodness.
It is. It is.
How are you dealing with it?
I'm trying to let it go, honestly, like a little bit, because I was obsessing. Like, I mean, obsessing over it. Kept retracing steps, like going through the office and looking through files. Like, I'm like, because I am somebody who, like, I don't let things go. And like, I know everything has an explanation. Okay. There's a reason for everything.
Right.
This one I wasn't supposed to know, apparently.
No, I guess not. It was a little secret in their family that I think someone from above is playing some influence. I don't know. It's unbelievable. That is one of the craziest stories I've ever heard.
Craziest story for me. I did make a TikTok on it, but I did a funeral for a very young man, very sad. Yeah. He was like in his 30s. I became you know, very close with the family as we were working together. And as he was like going through the process of going on life support and all that stuff, the family was calling me, you know, like it could be now, like they're going to move him here. And we were really staying on top of things.
Uh-huh.
And I would keep getting off the phone saying, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you.
Yeah.
And then it was like a Sunday morning. I wake up and one of my friends called me and they were like, listen, like you got to start praying. Our friend's son, he's going in. He got called for a heart. He's 12 years old. Oh. He had a bad, born with a bad heart. He's been on the donor list. They were like, he's getting transported to the hospital now, you know? Jeez. I was like, okay, like, you know, keeping in my prayers, like, all good faith. And then, like, a few hours go by, and I got the call from the family of my donor. He passed away. He was transported to the same hospital that my friend's son got his heart. So I ended up doing the funeral for the man who donated his heart, you know, his organs, his heart, to my best friend's son.
I have the chills.
Crazy.
Whoa.
And we didn't know at first. We weren't sure. Like, I mean,
oh my
every
gosh,
sign.
Cry. Wow.
They were transported into different hospitals. It was a meat thing. And then they did release the name. It was like 6 weeks later and it was the same name.
Oh my gosh. That's beautiful.
Right?
That is amazing. And how is the little guy doing?
Right?
Okay.
Great.
Wow.
You know, so
that's young and awesome.
Amazing story. Like,
that is really cool.
To this day, like that family, me, we became very close. They touched my heart in ways that, like, what a gift.
It really
and
is.
You know, like, I don't know, not that I'm not against organ donation. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. But like when you're going through that process as a funeral director and the family's calling you and it's like, you know, they're gonna take his eyes, they're gonna take his skin, and you're just like, oh my gosh, all this stuff, and you're freaking
like,
out.
This work
and
what
like,
I have
just
to
the
do.
Beauty of everything and how it all went was just amazing.
It goes full circle. That's how wonderful. That's really beautiful.
And so specific to like me, you know, like it could have been a funeral director.
Could have been anyone. And it was you. Well, Melissa, this has been so much fun just getting to talk to you and to get to kind of get a little bit behind the scenes of what you do every day. And we love what you're doing out there. And I think you're making a big difference in not only funeral directors' lives, but like actual families' lives. And you can see the process and your thought process of what you're trying to do out there. And I think it's a great thing. And I think a lot of people benefit from you. So we appreciate everything that you do and just taking the time to talk to us. It's been so much fun.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Sorry. I talked a lot.
No, I'm usually the one blathering. So it's good.
Took that away easy.